The Holy Gospel according to Matthew, the 22nd chapter. Once more, Jesus spoke to them in parables, saying, "The kingdom of heaven may be compared to a king who gave a wedding banquet for his son. He sent his slaves to call those who had been invited to the wedding banquet, but they would not come. Again, he sent other slaves, saying, 'Tell those who have been invited, look, I have prepared my dinner. My oxen and my fat calves have been slaughtered, and everything is ready. Come to the wedding banquet.' But they made light of it and went away, one to his farm, another to his business, while the rest seized his slaves, maltreated them, and killed them. The king was enraged. He sent his troops, destroyed those murderers, and burned their city. Then he said to his slaves, 'The wedding is ready, but those invited were not worthy. Go, therefore, into the main streets and invite everyone you find to the banquet.' Those slaves went out into the streets and gathered all whom they found, both good and bad. So the wedding hall was filled with guests. But when the king came to see the guests, he noticed a man there who was not wearing a wedding robe. And he said to him, 'Friend, how did you get in here without a wedding robe?' And he was speechless. Then the king said to the attendants, 'Bind him hand and foot and throw him into the outer darkness, where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. For many are called, but few are chosen.'" The Gospel of the Lord. So, a couple of weeks ago, I was sitting back in my recliner watching another decades-old rerun of Law and Order on my smart television. That was until I was rudely awakened from my semi-slumber by the ringing of the doorbell about 15 feet off of my port bow. Rarely does anyone ring that bell. I live among fields and very few neighbors, not even the delivery people who dash back to their vehicles to escape human contact and move on to their next delivery ring that bell. So I pushed a button to let the recliner down, stood up, walked to the front door with some bewilderment, and opened it. And there they were, two elderly ladies, a little younger than me, who said they wanted to read a passage from Scripture. I knew what they wanted to do. They wanted to read for me something from 2 Peter or Revelation or one of the other eschatological end-time texts from Scripture. I knew this. And so they wanted to remind me that some people were going to heaven and some people were going to hell. And so I told them that I was a Lutheran pastor and had a different perspective on faith than they did. We talked for a few minutes. They never got to read their text for me. One woman lamented that the Bible should unite people. I silently lamented that people too often fear death and fixate on their own salvation instead of the present moment at the expense of a relationship with those right in front of them, here and now. Interestingly, when they departed, one of the women thanked me for not being mean to them. Aha! A moment of real time, here and now, without fear, without division, just human sharing, some God-given time on God's good earth. A moment of fellowship, even if not quite ready to have a meal together. Our first reading this morning speaks of a future time. It tells us that there will come a time when God will destroy the shroud that is cast over all peoples, and this death will be swallowed up, will be no more. Never again will we need to weep over the death of someone dear to our hearts. Never again will we feel the pain and sorrow that death separation brings with it. Never again will there be missing from our lives some loved and familiar face. God will banish death from the earth, and all of our reasons for for tears. Isaiah's words this morning were offered to balance the words of judgment having already been offered in previous chapters in Isaiah. They may have had a similar effect upon Israel in exile as Martin Luther King's "I Have a Dream" speech had on his audience. I have a dream that my four little children will one day live in a nation where they will not be judged by the color of their skin, but by the content of their character. It's not here now, not yet, probably not tomorrow, but the hope is present now. In much the same manner, Isaiah writes of hope. On this mountain, the Lord of hosts will make for all peoples a feast of rich food. The people, you see, were hungry. A feast of well-aged wines. The people were on the run, no time to age wine. Of rich food filled with marrow, of well-aged wine string clear. Isaiah's hope is in the same God who brought judgment and destruction to his people. And today, well beyond and much deeper than the hope of the weapons of military might, is the hope of judgment and salvation for the people of Israel and of the Gaza Strip. When will such final reckoning come? The passage from Isaiah says only that it will happen on that day. And its message speaks directly to the people of faith, not those outside of the community of faith, on the day in which it is read. It is not meant to be read in opposition to anyone. It is not meant to divide people. Indeed, it is meant to bring people together as God's redeemed people. In the Holy Scriptures, table fellowship is a sign of friendship and peace. And the picture that Isaiah gives us is of a universal banquet, when persons of every race and circumstance, every background and status and condition, eat and drink together in celebration of their fellowship with one another and with God. Such is the king's banquet described in the Gospel of Matthew. Matthew, however, cautions those who have been invited through God's gracious invitation that they can say no to the invitation and thus be excluded from the kingdom's final banquet and thus from the gift of life. Our reading struggles with the reality of Matthew's day that many in the church were Jewish converts to Christianity, and yet many in Israel did not convert. And some converts waffled in their lifelong commitment. And so Matthew, in his three judgment parables, today's being the third, joins his voice with his fellow converts in lamenting this development and rejection of Jesus within the family of faith. But it comes with a warning to those converts not to be too smug in their newfound faith. And two, anyone who receives a gracious invitation, perhaps through baptism, and shows up at the banquet having really rejected that grace, will be excluded. Such warnings go out to Christians who have been baptized into the faith and who falsely assume that having received such a gracious invitation means that they can now ignore their baptism and live whatever self-centered, despicable life they desire, and God will not care. On Monday of this week past, I attended the memorial service for a former parishioner, golfer, and friend of mine. Jack was 81 years old, and for him, on that day had come. Every pew was filled. During the service, wonderful things were said about Jack. Usually at funerals, people find wonderful things to say about people, true or not. But in my experience of Jack, the things said of him were actually true. But what impressed me the most was not that they were said, but who said them. She was the only one to speak, and she was not a member of the family. She was a young coworker of Jack's, who was at first intimidated by him. He could be that way. but eventually came to see past his tough exterior to find a mentor and perhaps a father figure in her life. She lost her father early in life. And she spoke warmly and with passion of the knowledge of Jack's faith and love and deeds that began at baptism and was actually made manifest throughout his entire life until on that day. Of course, Jack was not a perfect man. You see, he didn't always agree with me. He did not have to be, however, because he lived his life of God-given faith in the hope of the resurrection through the gift of the cross and resurrection of Christ. And though final judgment of any sort is not mine to make, of course, I hope that Jack will save us some of that rich food and wine at the great banquet. It's noteworthy that among those who missed the great banquet in the parable of Matthew were folks who did not choose bad places to go instead of the banquet, just ordinary ones. Jesus said that one went to his farm, another to his business. These are reasonable destinations, plausible priorities. So too was holding on to the faith of their fathers that had been given them by God so many centuries before. Yet when they interfere with God's invitation to Christ's banquet, suddenly they are not the best choices one can make at the moment. And we should note that the kingdom's feast, be it on a mountain or at a wedding banquet, is a feast for all people, according to our passages from Isaiah and Matthew. It is not just a banquet for those we have loved or at least liked, and it is not just a meal for those whom we have considered to be among the faithful. God's invitation goes out to everyone. So hopefully, we will be surprised at the final banquet in the kingdom by the presence of our dinner companions, who they might be. Indeed, because the church is the gathering of those invited to the banquet, what does that say to us when we consider who it is we should invite into our fellowship? Can we ever invite the wrong person to church? Will Willimon, a Methodist minister and one-time bishop, tells the story of Helen and Gladys, two retired school teachers who were sent out to invite people to church. The committee setting up the neighborhood assignments for the visiting teens was very specific about the neighborhoods to be visited, only certain ones. The problem, as Will tells it tongue-in-cheek, is that Helen and Gladys turned left when they should have turned right. So they ended up doing their inviting in the poor housing development close to their neighborhood rather than a nice upper-middle-class neighborhood, which meant that Helen and Gladys proceeded to evangelize the wrong neighborhood and thereby ran the risk of inviting the wrong people to their church. The mistake was realized when some of those people showed up for church the next Sunday. What a great surprise for the people. Can one invite the wrong people to church? Are there those who are too high class or too low class, too rich or too poor, too light-skinned or too dark-skinned, too conservative or too liberal, the wrong heritage, the wrong job, no job at all? Can one invite the wrong people to church? Maybe in our church, but not in Jesus' church. We can't invite the wrong person to church, for Jesus makes it clear that nobody is out of bounds. No demoniac is too crazy, no woman at a well too promiscuous, no Peter too bullheaded, no Martha too compliant, no Zacchaeus is too wealthy, no Bartimaeus is too poor, no leper is too unclean, no Gentile or Canaanite or Roman is the wrong race, no child is too small, no Pharisee is too righteous. No one is left out. Everyone is invited. We are to invite everyone to be baptized and live the full life of faith and rejoice Be glad in God's salvation here and now. Even Jehovah's Witnesses. I did.